plage. Faites une belle journée. Viens marcher dans la mer. Autant profiter. La nuit va tomber, le soleil est beau.
My beautiful human beings, those two sounds, yes, I will never forget. Not only me, none of the teachers or students would ever forget. The first one was a school bell ringing, and the second one was typing. And typing means online school nowadays. This is your host, Puya Ratnam, and you're listening to CKT 90.3 FM, John Abbott, on the air. We all know how students feel about online schooling. For example, in my case, I feel like online schooling is so hard to concentrate on because we get distracted really easily. But have you guys ever thought about the teachers? You know what? I actually thought about the teachers. I was like, wait, I really don't like online schooling. How about the teachers? And I actually thought, you know what? Teachers probably like it so much because, you know, it's comfort. They're at their house. They just have to turn on a computer or a Mac or whatever they have. And you know what? They just teach. But actually, in an article that I've read, some teachers agree. Some people disagree about it. Some teachers say that they like it. It's in their comfort zone. They, you know, it's new technology and, you know, technology is everything nowadays. And some teachers, they feel like, you know, online is not that good because they can't really communicate with their students. So if I've interviewed 5 teachers for you guys, and 4 of them are from John Abbott College, and one of them is actually a new teacher. She's on her first year in a high school, and she's a full-time teacher at Lauryn Hill Academy.
So online teaching has been a huge challenge this year. I was lucky enough last term to teach a blended class, so I got to meet the students that I was teaching, and we had about maybe 5 sessions together, and that made it work really well. Like I got to actually meet them and get to know them and have a connection with them outside of the online environment. And then when we had to go online, it worked out pretty well, like, because I still had a connection to them. This term I haven't had that. I've been entirely online, and it's really hard, I find, to, like, it's hard to establish a connection with the students, although I've been able to more than I would have thought. But, you know, you just, some of my students, I don't know what they look like. I don't even know what they sound like. You know, the way I know about them is through the papers that they turn in, and it's very limited, you know. So I can't say I love it. I can't say I even like it. But I think that there are some things about it that I will probably keep. You know, like, there, I'll probably continue to teach, like, in person as much as I can, but I may do some stuff online that I've learned how to do this term.
That was Thomas Young, a professor from John Abbott College. And another problem that I had as a student was turning on my camera. And it was until I, you know, found out the background filter, and then I applied that, and, you know, people don't see my house anymore. But before that, I was really uncomfortable, and probably teachers were uncomfortable also, because you know, when I was doing this research on the topic, I actually found out that we are viewing our teacher's house and they're viewing our house, which is getting into more connection than an actual school, you know. In a school, it's just classrooms, and the teachers don't really know what's going into your house, and we don't know what's going into their house. Because, you know, as soon as we unmute ourselves or turn on our camera, everyone can see everything.
I think it has to do with the style of teacher I am, but I was informed by the college that I can't force anyone to turn on their camera, you know? So a teacher who says to you that you have to turn on your camera, you could always say no, from my understanding, you know? But, I mean, it is, I think, as a student, if a teacher asks you to turn on your camera, you should turn it on, you know? And when I have a guest in the class, I do force all the students to turn on the camera. And, you know, yesterday I had a guest in my Radio 1 class, and there were still two students that refused to turn it on. And I made a note, you know, and I'm, you know, they're going to somewhere down the line lose at least a few marks or a couple of marks for that, you know? I mean, I don't see how I can not do that because, you know, as I said at the beginning of the class, don't partake in this guest lecture if you're going to have your camera on, you know? Because it's a sign of respect to the person that I'm asking to be a guest and the teacher who's not being paid to teach the class, who's doing it for free, who's doing it as a volunteer. But in my own teaching, as the teacher, my understanding is I can't force a student to turn on a camera. And when I first started teaching online, I didn't ask students to turn on cameras, and I got used to it. And a lot of my teaching is me lecturing and explaining things. And unless we have something to discuss, or unless a student wants to discuss something, I don't need to see them, you know? And I find even when their camera is on, it doesn't mean they pay attention. I see people's cameras on and they're doing other things, or they're showing a little corner of their head, or it's dark in their room. And so what's the point, you know? So it's not something I can control. And CEGEP students, for the most part, are adults or almost adults. So they assume, you know, like, you know, they assume their own schooling. They're responsible for their education. I'm not. I'm not going to be like their parent that, you know, tells them, you know, that they have to have their camera on if they don't want to have their camera on. So far, so good, you know.
Interview was with Ryan Young. He's a professor at John Abbott College. You know, as an online student, it's very hard for me to, you know, time manage. I sometimes don't even have time to spend with my family. And most of the time, approximately, I would have online class for 3 hours to 6 hours. And then 3 hours for homework. And maybe homeworks do take weekends sometimes. It depends on, you know, the teacher and the assignments. But other than that, rarely I would only work on it for 12 hours or even less. But I still don't have time for my family. And there's like 24 hours out of a day. And, you know, I actually read where teachers, after online school started, they work for 24/7, and when they mean 24/7, they mean as in answering your MIO or, you know, chatting with you because, you know, you need help with your assignment, correcting your assignments online, and online schooling. So basically, they don't even have time to spend with their family, which I've read in an article, but
yeah, absolutely. I do feel there's a lot more hours. There's many ways now, too, to contact me. So we've always had MIO, but we also have Teams, which is the platform that we use. So I get a lot of Teams messages as well. And so it's checking both platforms. And I will say, since teaching online, the amount of messages I'm receiving have increased quite a bit. So for me to answer emails takes quite a bit of time. And yeah, changing, you know, my whole setup to be online also takes, you know, work and time trying to figure out even choreographies. I used to do like a lyrical choreography. It's really hard. People just don't have the room. So there's a lot of configuring. There's a lot of figuring out. And yeah, the emails, I do have a lot and I try to get back as quick as I can, but there are two platforms now that I'm like looking at. There's Teams and then there's MIOs as well. I am a huge advocate for making time for the family. So at some point, you know, look, do I get messages on the weekends? Absolutely. I do get messages on the weekends. It's kind of like, you know, school doesn't necessarily end. And yeah, there are certain messages, like if I have time, I'll quickly shoot off an email to say, yep, and answer the question. But you know, there has been students during spring break who've, you know, asked me, you know, can you write me a letter of recommendation? And I was actually on spring break with my kids, and I was like, I'm not even near a computer. I'm really sorry, but it's just, I, you know, sometimes I, you know, family time is very important for me, especially if it's something like spring break. But when I can, I do try and answer the students as much as I can, because I know that they're, I don't want them to stress and they're stressing out, but I also have to remember I have a family.
Interview was with
Bronwyn Lloyd Hughes and
professors at John Abbott College. These were great interviews, and I have so much more knowledge about how teachers feel about online school. Hope this helps many students who are wondering like me. And remember, guys, our teachers are working as hard as us, so we're not alone. This has been Pooya Ratnam. Until next time, stay safe and love you.
Did you hear the difference? Hi, I'm Dylan Pine with John Abbott on the air on CKUT 90.3 FM. And this is a radio documentary on how hockey has dealt with COVID-19. What you just heard was the difference between a normal NHL playoff and the 2020 NHL playoffs. As many hockey fans know, it is not only a physically draining sport, but a mentally draining sport as well, for not only the players, but the coaches, staff, workers, and fans. This doesn't only address the NHL, but minor hockey leagues as well, whose seasons, and more specifically, the playoffs, were cut short due to COVID-19. As COVID-19 made its way through the world, it began to affect the sporting world as well. On March 11, 2020, when an NBA player on the Utah Jazz tested positive for COVID-19, which led to the shutdown of the NBA. A day later, the shutdown of the NHL occurred. And with the shutdown of the NHL, minor hockey leagues were also being shut down throughout the province of Quebec. This had some people disappointed, such as Derry Pine, who was a coach for a minor league team in a 2019-2020 season, who had this to say about the playoffs being shut down.
Disappointed as a coach, extremely disappointed for the kids and for all our parents who were there for the full season. We had a very good season, and we won our semifinal game in overtime. And as we were walking off the ice, one of the Lake St. Louis
executives
came up to us while we were leaving the ice and said, "That's it, the season's over." And we were dumbfounded, saying, "Nah, it can't be." The finals were going to start on the Saturday, and this was on the Thursday night, and that was it. We were done. And so I like to think that we won it because the other teams still hadn't played their semifinals, and we were the only team to make the finals. So that's what I told the kids, we won.
With the NHL being shut down for multiple months, the fans eventually convinced the NHL to start talking about a return to play. And eventually, with the help of six players who are Ron Hainsey of the Ottawa Senators, Connor McDavid of the Edmonton Oilers, Mark Scheifele of the Winnipeg Jets, John Tavares of the Toronto Maple Leafs, and James Van Riemsdyk of the Philadelphia Flyers, the NHL's commissioner, Gary Bettman, put out this statement on how the rest of the 2020 season will play out.
24 of our 31 teams will resume play. The top 12 in each conference as ranked by percentage points from our standings as they stood through the games of March 11th, when we paused our season as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. The remaining seven teams will enter the draft lottery, which I will discuss in detail later. For purposes of nomenclature, record keeping and NHL awards, the 2019-20 regular season has been deemed to be completed. We will resume play and conduct the 2020 Stanley Cup playoffs in two hub cities that will be identified and announced at a later date. One will be the site for the resuming Eastern Conference clubs. The other will play host to the resuming Western Conference clubs. Each will have secure arenas, practice facilities, hotels, and local transportation for our players, coaches, and essential staff.
The cities that were chosen for the Eastern and Western Conference bubbles were Toronto and Edmonton, where each conference played in their respective bubbles until the Stanley Cup playoffs, where the Tampa Bay Lightning went over to Edmonton to face off against the Dallas Stars. Throughout the bubble, players did not have many complaints. The Colorado Avalanche's Nathan MacKinnon had this to say just after the Gary Bettman statement on the return to play plan. Quote, "I think this is a pretty good format, how they're doing it. You know, there's no perfect way. Everybody had to get creative, and it seems like a good place to start." Once the NHL playoffs were over, the wait for the next hockey season was a long one, with minor hockey also not having a defined date of return. Although it did come back in late August/early September, it was quickly cut short due to the rise in the number of COVID-19 cases in the province. I talked to the president of Hockey West Island, Andy Brookman, about how parents have felt with the decision of not having a hockey season.
Appointment. I remember walking down my street on the second night and saw one of our members playing with his kids outside. And so I said to him, "What a shame about the hockey season." And he says, "We're absolutely crushed." You know, I was a little bit surprised that he used that terminology, but the parents understand it's not the association's fault. It's a global pandemic, and we basically had no say in it to ourselves. So,
because of these decisions, Hockey West Island decided that they would give parents the option of getting a refund on the season, or they let Hockey West Island keep the money and save it for next season. And I asked Andy which option parents have preferred.
We have about just over 650 members in Hockey West Island. And to date, I think we've got approximately 200 requests for refunds. You know, so if 2/3 of our members have left their registration fees with us, you know, That's a good sign, and there's nothing saying that the people who've asked for their registration back won't be re-registering. It's hard to say at the moment, but my guess is that there will be a fairly large influx of people wanting to play hockey again. You know, people are worried that perhaps attendance or membership, will drop off. But I think it could have the opposite effect, where people will be really, really excited to get back in the arenas.
Even though the NHL and minor leagues such as Hockey West Island have done a good job in controlling this pandemic, with some praise must come some controversy. With the NHL, it came with the 2021 season, where because of COVID-19, there have been multiple protocols that the franchises have to follow. Not only does it separate players from their families, but it also drains the mental health of these players. And Vegas Golden Knights goalie Robin Leonard has this to say about it.
But we were approached and promised things to change for our league if we got vaccinated. So after our second vaccination, 10 days after, we were going to start enjoying life again, because people don't really know. We've been in total isolation. We can't get out of our house. We can't go out of our hotel. We can't do anything. And it's been over a year now, and no one ever talks about the mental health impact about that stuff. And you guys might not have the statistics. I don't have the statistics. I just know people reach out to me throughout the league, throughout, you know, normal people in all day life reach out to me. And I know, and I've seen the consequences of a lot of these things. And to be promised something's going to change, to take a vaccine where some people, some players were on the verge of even taking it. I was one of them that I wasn't sure, but I took it for my mental health. And when we did it, now they changed. Now they said it's not happening. I think that's wrong for first. But then I have a couple of calls with the league and with the NHLPA yesterday. And this is why I want to talk today, which makes me furious. And I don't care what happens to me or whatever people are going to do. They told me yesterday that they're surveying all the teams to see who has taken the vaccine and who has not taken the vaccines. And they're not going to change the rules for us as players until all the teams have have the vaccines at the same time. So it's not a competitive edge. And that made me go crazy, to be honest, because that shows me that now I've taken the vaccine and it's been a tremendously hard time for, I speak for myself personally, throughout this COVID thing with my mental health condition, being in isolation, getting these rules. I can't do anything by being in my home all the time, being in a hotel room all the time. And I talk to players around the league that calls me that, and also people I've helped through the program and get help and all that stuff. I know more than a lot of people knows what's going on.
But of course, with this statement from Leonard comes some controversy, because NHL Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly said no such promises were ever made. Therefore, the topic is so controversial because we, as fans, have no real knowledge on who is right and who is wrong. But most hockey fans do know what Robin Leonard said about players reaching out to him is true, because Leonard has been very open that he has bipolar disorder, and he is the most open about mental health throughout the league. Not only is there controversy in the NHL, but there is also controversy in the minor leagues, with young people who have jobs but can't work at the arena because of the lack of hockey. I talked to Michael Lentz, who is a storekeeper, and I asked him if he would still have a job with the possible coming season. And I also asked him how stressed he is not having a job during this tough time.
So I've been scorekeeping for 4 to 5 years, so it's pretty much guaranteed to get the job if I want to scorekeep when hockey opens back up. I would say it's definitely a bit of both. I would say that it's less stressful now, as I have more time for like studying for my school and have free time. But at the same time, I feel as it's a bit more stressful, as I know that I don't have as much income coming in as I would have.
With the 2021 NHL season coming to a close, there have definitely been some good ways that the NHL and minor leagues have been dealing with this pandemic. But there have also been some ways that have had a controversial tone around it. Thank you. This has been Dylan Pine with John Abbott on the air on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Hello everyone, you're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM, John Abbott on the air. My name is David Cardona, and today I'm interviewing my brother, Adam Cardona, about hockey during COVID-19 and his pathway to playing at a professional level. After an impressive year in 2019 with the Lac-Saint-Louis Lions scoring 16 official goals and finishing the season with over 30 points in Mitch AAA, Adam was drafted by the Quebec Ramparts in the 2019 Quebec Junior Major League Draft. He joins me now after being stuck in the States for an entire year playing hockey during COVID.
I guess we could start by going through your history in hockey, actually, because it's quite extensive.
Yeah.
Now that we think about it. So you've always played high caliber, right? You played A, then you played double A, but you played double A for
1 year.
1 year.
And then I went to triple A.
Yeah. And then you played 1 year of triple A, not on the Lions. And then you played a year of triple A with the Lions.
Yeah.
And then the year of AAA, you didn't play with the Lions. Even though you didn't play with the Lions, I mean,
I got moved up halfway through the year.
You did. You did get moved up halfway through the year. And then you, if I'm not mistaken, you scored 15 goals on your year with the Lions, right?
My second year at Lions, I scored 17, I think it was.
Yeah,
which is it was a stupid number.
Which is very impressive for Mitch Tripoli as a defenseman.
I don't know how. I think half of them were flukes, kind of just like shot from the blue line, you know.
Yeah, but still, impressive for, you know, regardless of a second year or not, Vega D scoring that many is incredibly impressive.
Yeah.
And then, so after that, shockingly, you did get drafted that year too.
Yeah.
Which was a bit of a shock.
Well, it's like we knew, like when they called us and stuff. I told them like I was 50-50 going or not. So I think the like where I got drafted was a bit of a shocker, but yeah, getting drafted was pretty sick.
Mm-hmm. And for those who are tuning in now, I had my brother, Adam Cardone, was drafted to Quebec, to the Ramparts, at least in our point of view, unexpectedly. But you made your decision not to go, and instead you ended up in the States.
Yeah, and that's ended up in the U.S.
Yeah, and that's what I want to mainly talk about today, because you ended up going to the States to play hockey at Kimball Union during a very interesting time. So I would like to know, first of all, how was your experience playing hockey in the States during COVID?
Overall, like the prep school experience was like, it was sick. It was a lot of fun. It's a lot different. You're independent. You're on your own a lot. You kind of make your own schedule with your classes and everything. Like it's almost like a college schedule. I was up. I like sometimes I sleep in, sometimes I don't. And then when I'm done classes, I pretty much go straight to the rink or whatever, get ready, go on the ice, and then eat, like go to bed or do my homework. Go to bed and repeat that process. But no, like the playing during Corona was definitely different. A lot of different rules kept changing. Started off, we had like the rules were very strict. They had like masks at all times. We had to wear, even outside, if you're walking with someone, like you got to wear a mask inside, like all the time. They're very strict with the COVID rules. They sent a lot of people back home. Like if you weren't respecting the rules, like they weren't afraid to like call you out for it, like give you COVID units is what they called them. You get suspended and
Oh, so did you guys? So did you play the majority of the games, or did you end up just practicing for like weeks on end and play a game occasionally back and forth?
We were supposed to play every weekend.
Yeah.
But we did not end up doing that. Our school was fine for the most part. We did have one incident where we got COVID we were put off for 2 weeks. It spread through like half of our team, but we were mostly just practicing. We're on the ice every day that we could. And then the weekends came around and like we're on our toes, like we didn't know. And then we'd get a notice from the other school saying like, oh, like we got COVID, we can't play. And so I was like, oh, bummer. And so we play inter squad, but we managed to get 6 games in, which is more than like most people. So like, I'm thankful for that, but it was definitely not what I'm used to.
So then I guess it isn't that good of a metric to judge, but I would still like your opinion anyways. From what I've heard, the level of quality is kind of meh. So after having played in Mitchell AAA and having done pretty high level training camps, how would you say is the level of prep school in terms of like Kimball Union and that entire area compared to AAA?
So prep school hockey is definitely, it's definitely, for the most part, it's better than AAA hockey. I think most teams would compete. Like this year, for instance, I think our AAA team from last year and the year before actually would put up a good fight, probably beat the team that I was on this year. I kind of expected prep school hockey to be like a good level, like a really like intense, high intensity, which it was. But it honestly didn't have the skill level that I thought it was going to have. And so I'm only basing it off of 6 games. And we didn't play the best teams either, so I didn't get the full experience. But from what I could tell, like it's probably better than AAA hockey, but not by much. I think it should be like probably better.
For those of you just tuned in, that was an interview with Adam Cardona about hockey during COVID-19 and his pathway to playing professional hockey. Adam was drafted by the Quebec Ramparts in the 2019 Quebec Junior Major League Draft after having an impressive season in 2019, scoring 16 goals as a defenseman for the Mitch AAA Lac-St. Louis Lions. He finished the 2021 season playing at Kimball Union and looks to continue his adventures playing hockey in the United States. My name is David Cardona, and you're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM John Abbott on the air.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to CKUT 90.3 FM. This is John Abbott on the air. I'm Evie Stockvist. See you next time.
Happy birthday to you, joyeux anniversaire, samedi midi et terre.